One, to this first sort of in this in-between week, post-Christmas, pre-New Year's. In this most interesting of years. The years come and go. Christmases come and go. The lights come up, the lights go down. The presents are bought, the presents are wrapped, the presents are open, the presents are used. And then they, over time, lose their newness. Maybe you're forgotten. And the world continues on. What came to mind today was the four nutriments. It seems as the years go by, the teachings of the four nutriments become even more important. Several years ago, actually, we spent in our community sort of wove the four nutriments throughout the year. And there's an excellent website. Part of our website on nourishing well-being that I certainly recommend to people. There are many, many teachings and practices in Buddhism that are available to us. But I think it's important that we always rely on a foundation, same way we rely on meditation, mindfulness, concentration, same way we rely on the four immeasurables, loving kindness and compassion, same way we rely on the five mindfulness training and ethical basis to our life. I think the four nutriments, especially for lay people who live in the world, are vastly important. And we also have to understand, and I think this is a challenge, and I've said this before, so I need to say it again. This is a very challenging time in the course of human history to be practicing Dharma, or be practicing any kind of spiritual path. Because our minds are so busy, because time, in the world of time, moves so quickly, because there's so much to distract us, externally and internally, my sense is it is incredibly challenging to incorporate teachings into our life. It is very difficult even to incorporate our own insights, whether they come when we're contemplating something, reading something, meditating deeply on something, to incorporate them into our life. Because our minds, our life has such an energy to it. So I think this is our challenge. And I think this is often sort of the frustrating part for many people in practicing Dharma, is that even though people have been students of Dharma, studying, retreating, meditating, still it seems to elude us. I can't tell you how often in talking to students, new as well as old, people will say, "I can't believe that I'm still getting tossed about by this. I can't believe that I'm still reacting like this. I can't believe I still get caught like this, you know, with the idea that somehow I know better. And I think because the problem is it takes time, because we are mostly processing our experience in what's called the upper levels of our mind, which is primarily in the sphere of thinking, conceptualization, ideas. This is mostly where we're playing with Dharma and learning Dharma. But if anybody has watched their mind, they realize thoughts come in and go out very quickly. And even the highest, most wonderful thought or insight that one has can be followed 2 minutes later by the most base. That is the nature of the upper level of the mind. So as long as our Dharma is mainly enshrined in our conceptual mind, our capacity to practice it is really very limited and is very easily sabotaged. And this is, you know, many people think it's a personal fault. It's not a personal fault at all. It is just the nature of the upper levels of the mind. The thinking mind can't hold on to anything, as you notice. Try to hold on even to a thought, right? They're so slippery. Plus, there is this energy, this unconscious yet very a conscious sort of energy that is always passing through our mind, which is always coming from our storehouse consciousness. All the impressions, all the energies, all the issues, all the from the past is always on a continuum, just appearing and reappearing and reappearing. As well as, again, I mean, human beings always had that issue, but we have the issue of we are always distracted these days. You know, I often think it's interesting. You know, people come to a Dharma talk here on Zoom, but when the talk is over, and people might have, again, had a meaningful experience, had a, aha, yes, that sounds good. Yeah, I'm going to do that. That sounds right, right? But as soon as we walk out of here, what do? We check our phones. We check our this. We turn on the radio in the car. We just get on with our day, right? We get on with our day. And so there's nothing to hold it, you see. It's not held. And so therefore, it just becomes another experience in a time when it's just possible to have endless experiences, right? So I say this sort of like a caution, you know, the way when you buy products these days, they have all these cautionary things. So in a certain sense, Dharma has no caution, because there's no side effects, negative side effects or toxicity to Dharma. Dharma is a very good product. But the warning would be, it will not work unless taken according to directions. It's just as simple as that. And I think it's important that we know that, so we don't get frustrated, so we don't think there's something wrong with us intrinsically, or there's something wrong with the Dharma intrinsically, and get discouraged, lose interest, think we're just a special case, or settle for things getting a little better, or on the other side, not as bad as it used to be. So again, I think this is a unique challenge. As Americans, 21st century Americans, in a sense, we have a sense it's not getting better. Things are only speeding up. So I wanted to return to the four nutriments. I think they are just so fundamental. And again, you know, there is a sutra The sutta on the four nutriments, not very well known. Thich Nhat Hanh really sort of rescued it. Took it out of the Buddhist canon and really made it a very strong foundation of our communities and really pushed it forward as a very fundamental teaching, because he's had the unique perspective as a Zen teacher who grew up in a traditional Asian culture, that his encounter with modern culture and society was very fresh, and he had a very creative mind, and he was willing to encounter it as it is and look within the pharmacopoeia of Buddhism to find those teachings that he felt could be most beneficial to beings. So again, I encourage all of us, I'm going to talk about it today, but to relook at it and to, you know, we can always raise our game, so to speak. So it's good to stop and assess. So for some of you, these teachings will be fairly new. For some, you'll know it. But I invite all of us to take a look, especially as we move. Next week we'll be doing our beginning anew. So it's a good time to kind of reflect. And again, it's only by this continuous reflection that ideas, insights get deeper. They have to be reflected on. They have to be mulled over. They have to be contemplated. They have to be applied. They have to be seen by example. We have to be looking and watching to see their applicability. We have to be self-reflective on our own life to see what we're really doing. You know, so this is a very dynamic, interactive process. Practice should not be practice, apply, like a kind of linear, kind of. That's a very flat way to practice, I'd say. Not very inspiring, not very interesting. We have to be creative. We have to see these teachings as, you know, as something that's shining a light on life. And so we have to be willing to look at where it's shining, and we have to really begin to really see what's really going on there, and then to really, you know, contemplate, reflect on these teachings and see, you know, do they have meaning here? How can they be applied here? And the application is a process. It's not like once. It's a process that we're always interacting with. We're always interacting with life. We're always interacting with ourself. We're always interacting with others. We're always interacting with reality. Thich Nhat Hanh says, truth is only found in reality, not through thoughts about reality. So we're instructed to do that. So the first nutriment is probably the most obvious, which is food. This is the first way we nurture ourselves. It's funny, I had to go to St. Joe's the other day just for a something or other, nothing of significance. And I was driving around, and when I got there and that whole complex, I thought, it's amazing, healthcare in this country. You know, driving around Tampa, you don't see factories, but you do no matter where you go. You know, South Tampa, North Tampa, you know, you see these, you know, so much. These gigantic hospitals and medical centers and doctor's offices. I mean, it's, you know, what's going on here? You know, that the health industry is a major American industry, a major employer, right? You know, what is wrong with the human body that it's so ill, it's so sick, right? The pharmaceutical industry, I mean, you know, that so much of our natural wealth and our talent is just focused on what? Remediating people's illnesses, right? You know, and you can't, you know, you interact with your family or communicate or connect by Zoom with family members, and what do you hear a lot about, right? You know, this one has got this, and this one's got that, and this one had to go to the hospital for this, and this one is being treated for that. I mean, isn't that right? You know, and I don't say this to brag, but I once a year I go to a, I have a physical. And so I see my doctor once a year. I'm very fortunate. And he said to me this year, he said, because I'm 75 years old, he said, you are my only 75-year-old, you know, or somebody said, who does not take any medications. And I went, wow. I mean, you know, he didn't like say you're in the top 20%. He said, you're the only one. Now, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not saying this to say I'm anything. You see what I'm saying? It could be all my mother's genes or something. I mean, I don't, but it's kind of interesting. Right? How abnormal I am. So, you know. So this body is a vehicle. This body is a vessel by which we achieve our aspirations and our goals in this life. That is what it is. It is not something to abuse. It's not something to indulge. It is not something to be a vehicle, you know, for pleasure or meaning. It is a vehicle that will take us where we want to go. And so we have to take good care of it. That's all it is. It is not something to act out our greed. It is not something to act out our need. It is not something to act out our unhappiness, our boredom, or all the things that we use it for. It is a vehicle. That's all it is. And so we have to just nourish it, take good care of it, right? Give it healthy foods, exercise it, so it stays healthy and strong. Make sure it gets enough sleep. Make sure it's not tight and tense. It's relaxed. You know, all the things that we need to do. Just to take care, it's just the body. It's impermanent. It's even if we take care of it, even if I'm the healthiest 75-year-old, which he didn't say I was the healthiest, he just said I'm not taking medications. You know, it's still wearing out. You know, it's funny, I look at my doctor now, I've been seeing him for a number of years, and I thought as I came in, he's looking a little older. When there was kind of, you know, and I'm sure he's looking at me going, he's looking a little older. We're all aging. The bodies will wear out, right? I mean, at some point, sickness will be very natural, but we have so much sickness that I think is produced by the way we eat and the way we don't take care of ourselves. Plus, you know, the body's a reflection of the environment, all the toxins in the, I mean, we can't even drink water anymore. Right? We have to worry about the toxins in the air, toxins in the food. I mean, this is, you know, where does that all enter? That all enters the body, right? I mean, that's where it all gets real. You know, that's what it's toxic to. So to really, you know, make sure that we're nurturing the body, it also means we are nurturing all the physical world, right? We want a healthy body, then we need a world where there is healthy food and healthy water and healthy air. And, you know, the products we're using in the house are not toxic, and you know, we're aware of this. So there's a high degree of mindfulness and awareness, not fear. I mean, some people go to extremes. Some people get obsessive in this life. You know, but it's a balance. It's doing our best and knowing it'll never be perfect. It's knowing we're doing our best, but it may not be good at all. We're doing our best to do it right, but it could be completely wrong. And yet, we have to act. So the first thing I encourage us to do is take care of the vehicle and other people's bodies, not just our own. Be aware. Be aware. The second nutriment, and again, this is sort of the body is probably most obvious to everybody. I think as the four nutriments goes on, it gets a little more interesting. The next one is sensory impressions. And what this means is, in the same way, we are consuming food with our body, right? Through our mouth primarily. All our senses, our eyes, our seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, sensing with our body, are also, we are endlessly consuming sensory experience. I mean, that is how we enter the world. We enter the world, you know, like this is the physical body. So that's what we take care of. But within our body are located all the senses, right? So it is through our body and the sensory organs that are in the body that we are able to relate to the world. We connect with the world. In a certain sense, it's how we consume the world, right? We're always consuming. In the same way we're eating and drinking through our mouth, through our senses, we are always consuming, eating the world. Because it is affecting us. It is affecting our minds. And could be affecting our bodies. Because we know, science is showing us, and Buddhism has always known, that body, mind are one. They're very interconnected. They affect each other. So, The second nutriment is sensory impressions. And so there we're talking about what is the effect of my consumption of sensory impressions. And in this, there's a sense that some are wholesome, some nurture the good in me, in my mind, in my well-being, make me well. Same way foods can make the body well. Sensory experiences can nurture me in a wholesome way, or they can nurture me in an unwholesome way. Right. This is very important, right? So what we're seeing, what we're hearing, what we're smelling, what we're tasting, affect us. Because the mind is interacting with all those experiences. The mind is grabbing on to all those experiences. The mind is processing all those experiences. So they are affecting us. Right? When we see I'm looking out the window when we see the blue sky and the orchid tree in bloom and da-da-da. It's good. We feel good. We feel happy. Well, I mean, I'm looking around in the Dharma hall. I'm seeing Dharma friends. You know, it's good. It's wholesome, right? You know, listening to the Dharma or listening to the voices of friends or listening to, good music or, you know what I'm saying, beautiful sounds. It's nurturing. It's wholesome, right? When we see things like, and then this is where it gets, and in the training it goes on, well, but don't forget, then there's conversations, right? Which is really interactions. Some of us coming from I don't know, with Zoom, it might have limited, but some of you might have had conversations with family members, you know, that you don't maybe often have, and some of them may have been what? Very wholesome. And some of them might have been a little what? Unwholesome. There's a lot of unwholesomeness around, a lot of things people talk about these days that are not wholesome. They produce fear. They produce anger. Right? Obviously, the things that we watch these days, you know, news and various kinds of shows, and, you know, what is the effect of my sensory consumption having on my mind? What is it nurturing in me? You see, and that's a question, you see. That's a question to ask ourselves. What is this nurturing in me? And it's not only what is to know what is it nurturing into me, but also, since we often have choices in the types of conversations we have, in the things we look at, in the things we smell, in the things we watch. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day who was going, you know, they were, you know, they were watching something. I forget, it was some show, you know, I don't know, I guess not on TV anymore. It's like, you know, one of those things, right? So they were watching some show. It was like a serial. And they kind of felt, oh, I've kind of, it's bad. I said, well, how much do you watch it or something? Well, it could be an hour or two a day. What? Okay. But they were feeling bad, like they were a bad practitioner. And I said, you know, it depends, you know, what's its effect on your mind? You know, that's the key thing. What's its effect on your mind? I mean, you know, that's at the end of the day. I mean, things aren't inherently bad or good, but it's how they're processed. You know, what's the effect on your mind? You know, if you're watching a movie, if you're watching a show, if you're listening to something, and it's wholesome, you know, it supports that which is good in you, you know, or makes you think about something, reflect, you know, that's fine. But if it's toxic, if it just gets you angry or scared, or it's meaningless, you know, there's a lot of meaninglessness in a lot of what people are listening to. It's like, so what? But I was talking to somebody the other day, and she was saying, wow, I really fell down the hole the other day. You know, I got on my whatever I got on, or, you know, at 7 o'clock at night, and the next thing I knew was 11, right? Maybe people can identify with that. So it was just like, you know, God. And she said, and at the end of it, it was like, so what? And then the next morning, I got up and I really felt kind of bad because I just had wasted a whole night. Like, not necessarily because it was bad, but because that time could have been used, you know, for doing something wholesome. And when I say wholesome, I don't mean, you know, 4 hours of meditation and Dharma, which is wholesome. Let me just say that, which is wholesome. But, you know, everybody has their own aptitude. But, you know, there could be other things that we could be doing that you know, in terms of our consumption, you know. How many of us, when we step outside, we look up at the sky, you know, and look at the sky, and look around at the trees and the flowers, or how many of us look at the people? You know what I'm saying? Do we nurture ourselves with what's available? And that takes a certain degree of mindfulness and a certain degree of kind of attention direction, you know? Because if we're not very consciously connecting through our senses to the wholesomeness of things, our mind, because of its conditioning, may be going on about things that are less than wholesome, or have nothing, or we're missing the experience that's right here in front of us, to connect to another human being, right? To enjoy, to be happy. Yeah, so this second, you know, to really realize that our minds are constantly being nurtured by the things that we consume through our senses is very important. So as you see, we're moving, we start out with the body, then we move to the senses, which are located in the body, sensory experience, and knowing they are nutritious or they're not nutritious. They are wholesome or they're unwholesome, or else they're kind of neutral. And again, it's nothing wrong with, somebody sent me something. It was an interview with the Dalai Lama, and the interviewer was asking him about his day, and he gets up at 3 a.m. He meditates for 4 or 5 hours. It's a very good way to spend part of your day. And then he's very busy. He's very busy the rest of the day. And then the guy asks him, I mean, like, what do you do to relax? Like, if you ever just don't want to do anything meaningful or something. So Dalai Lama says, it was so sweet. He got this little, he said, I like to watch shows about animals. Must be those animal channels. And he says, sometimes the ones about tigers and leopards and stuff, they're a little disturbing, But the, ones about like deer, peaceful ones, I really enjoy learning about them and watching them. So again, it wasn't like, TV bad, It wasn't like that. But it's like, do things that nurture. Now, the third nutriment is often translated as volition. And here it can mean volition, will, intention, aspiration. It's sort of like that energy that is directing us in this life. In other words, what am I focused on trying to get, or to get to? And so what is that object of my aspiration, of my intention? How am I using my will? Am I using my will to bend people, right? To me? Right? Is that my intention? Is my intention to get everybody to pay attention to me, to meet my needs? Is that my aspiration? Is that how I'm using my will? Am I always aspiring, desiring, wanting pleasure? Am I always wanting more things? Am I always aspiring for more experiences of all types? You see what I'm saying? More money, more things. How am I using? Because this is a fundamental a gift of having a human mind. Most animals, they have very limited. their aspirations are very concrete. It's mostly to what? Survive, right? Right. Every day, food. Every day, stay safe. Look out for predators. Maybe to stay warm or something, a place to, but they're very, and of course we know that they do care for their young when they're young. But they have very limited, it's just really their aspiration and will is always directed toward meeting their needs, surviving. Right, very fundamental. Human beings, we are very fortunate that we have a mind that can see beyond the immediacy of our situation and really have an aspiration, for things like to be happy or to be kinder or to take care of others or, all those things or to be enlightened or, to be free or, there are many aspirations we can have with our life. And yet often we use that tool for things that will really not produce, any real happiness or meaning or purpose they're not wholesome, I would say. You know, so we need, so the third thing that we are, the third nutriment, the third thing of, has the possibility of being nourishing is our aspirations, our intentions in this life. Because they, in, you know, and of course, you, many of you know, we spend a lot of time in our community talking about this. Because they have the ability to inform all our actions throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year, right? You know, if I have an aspiration to go here, then and if it's, and if I'm exercising my will, right? So will, you know, people go, will, you know, what is will? Will is very important in Buddhism. We, that's another capability, to have will, you know, to direct the actions of our body, speech, and mind where we want to direct it, to know we have that freedom. Most people don't know they have that freedom, but we know we have that freedom. So, you know, where am I directing my energy? You know, where am I, you know, I'm going through a lot here. These are all questions to reflect on, you see, but, you know, this is very important. Is it, you know, and again, it's not like ideally, you know, many of us have a distorted view of how we are. You know, when I used to be in the mental health world, you know, when you ask people to give a subjective account of something, they would say one thing. And then when you actually ask them to kind of log it, okay, you know, you might find that what's actually going on in reality is very different than what we think is going on or feel like's going on. You know, so... You know, having some kind of evidence-based, reality-based assessment is good. You know, we may say, yes, I am, oh, I've embraced the Bodhisattva way, right? My life is dedicated to my own awakening and liberation and to always be of benefit to others, right? There are probably many people who would say that. Yes, that's my aspiration. Now... If we actually then logged, you know, every 15 minutes what's going on in our mind and what our actions are, we might find that many of our actions, mind states throughout the day have nothing to do with our aspiration. Well, that's interesting. You know, what really is going on with me throughout the day? You see? So this takes reflection. Because then it's a moment of truth. It's like, hold on. Well, maybe that's really who I am. So why am I kind of imposing this kind of highfalutin, I want to benefit all beings. I really want to work and transform myself. I want to heal myself. You know, why am I even talking that if that's not the reality of my hour to hour, moment to moment life. Why don't I have something that's a little more true to me? Or if that really is my aspiration, well then how do I get myself in gear right throughout the day that I'm actually living what I say is my aspiration? So this is very aspiration, will, this is a very powerful nutriment, you know. What am I really, you know, where am I really going all day? Now again, in Buddhism, since mind is key, it doesn't mean, you know, that if you don't have a job, working in the ICU, taking care of sick COVID people, you're not really caring for sentient beings. It doesn't mean that. We can be doing anything. But our mind can always be of service. You know, whatever I'm doing, it's like, may this benefit others. You see, may this benefit others. That's always the wish, no matter what I'm doing, no matter what I work. May this bring some benefit to others. Right? That's always in the mind. And always as you go through your day, when you see suffering people, you're aware of that and you say, oh, I wish people didn't have to suffer. I wonder if there's anything I can do. Maybe there's nothing I can do. But maybe one day I'll have the ability to really help this person. I mean, so the the aspiration can always be in our minds, no matter where we are, no matter what we do, right? I mean, we could be out there building roads, you know? And you might go, oh, you know, or be a roofer or something. You think, yeah, well, this is benefiting people. You know, what I'm doing is benefiting people. Keeping people dry, keeping people safe, you know? So it doesn't matter, you know, what we're doing, right? You know, we're a parent. We're nurturing life. You know, we're in relationship. Do we have the aspiration to always cultivate love, kindness to the other person, to put their needs ahead of my own? You see, I mean, you know, what's in my mind, and is it congruent with my aspiration? Okay. So that's. You know, there's a lot to be said about all of these. And then the fourth one is consciousness. And this is really our mind state. You know, this is now in the mind. And there are in various aspects of the Abhidharma, the Buddhist kind of area of higher Dharma, but kind of really Buddhist psychology. There are various numbers of mind states, 51, let's say, you know, half are wholesome, half are unwholesome, right? Consciousness. What is my consciousness throughout the day? Which really has to do with mind states, you know, because when we are in a mind state, what does that mean? It usually means what? That we are processing something in our mind, right? We're going over something in our mind. We're cultivating a mind state, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, memories, you see? What am I cultivating by doing this? Is this wholesome for me? Or is this unwholesome for me? Now, all of a sudden, when we look at it that way, and this ties in very directly to what I said earlier about change. If we're always up here and it's always spinning around, we're not going to change much, because the energy that's really propelling our mind is the energy of the past, you see. It's in our storehouse consciousness. And I think I'm going to be giving a class in February on Yogacara or Buddhist psychology. So these mind states, and many, you know, everybody says, I don't know how I got here, right? All of a sudden you are there, aren't you? And you're mulling over something, and you're reacting to something, and you're obsessing about it, you're ruminating, or thinking about it, going over and over, or remembering, right? I mean, this is just going on, unconsciously. But that process is the process of nourishment, or lack of nourishment, or toxic nourishment. That's not the right term. So this is really getting to the key piece, because this is where the transformation comes most deeply. Again, many people will say, yeah, I want to be happy. I mean, who wouldn't say that? No, I don't want to suffer, right? I mean, again, that's our personal, very subjective statement. I want to be happy. Yeah, I don't want to be unhappy. Yeah, I don't want to have afflictive emotions, right? I mean, does everybody say that? And yet, if you look at your mind during the day, is that true? Because if we're cultivating afflictive emotion, which means not to say they arise, but then we go with them, we ruminate, we obsess, we repeat, we embroider, we talk about, we share, what are we cultivating? We're cultivating unwholesomeness. We're cultivating toxic mind states. we're cultivating thoughts, feelings, perceptions that create unhappiness, that make us feel bad, that make other people feel bad when we act out from them. And yet, an hour ago, we said what? I don't want to suffer anymore. I don't want to be anxious anymore. I don't want to be scared anymore. I don't want to be in despair anymore. I don't want to be angry anymore. I want a heart full of love and openness and caring and patience. But what are we cultivating throughout the day? What are we consuming in our mind? And so now we're getting into the things we put in our body are very overt, right? Anybody can see that, right? And whether this is healthy or not healthy, you can just look on the ingredients, right? Whether you're getting enough sleep, whether you're exercising, it's all very observable, and there are standards for it. There's a lot of research in terms of consumption, right? On that same program with the Dalai Lama, interviewer was referring to, a lot of this current research, with compassion, and basically showing that people who cultivate compassion, they lower their blood pressure. there's all kinds of things that, that doing these kinds of practices, do for the body. So again, that second is observable. But now when we get into the third, and especially with the fourth, we're getting into, it can be observed somewhat externally by others, but mostly it goes on very privately. See, now we're in the secret domain of each of us, right? Our own special world, where we just talk with ourselves. No one else is allowed in unless we let them. You see, and what's going on in there? And this may be the most important. Because even if we're doing all those outwardly nourishing things, right? And many of us could be saying, yeah, I do a lot of that. I do take good care of my body. And I do, watch my consumption of sensory. But if we're not being very careful about what our mind is chewing on, what our mind is cultivating, what kind of mind states we have wandered into, and what we do with them when we wander in, we may be sabotaging, undermining our desire for what we desire. Whether we desire our own personal happiness, or whether we desire to benefit all liberated beings and the happiness of others. Either one, it'll sabotage. So this fourth nutriment is very important. And of course, obviously, if you reflect on them, they do tie into many of the other practices and teachings we do. But I think having this foundation, this self-awareness about these four nutriments, I think is very essential. I point everybody in the direction of our website. Angie, what's the section called? In our resources section, but anyway, we'll put it in the mindfulness mind, and it's called what? Nourishing our well-being or something. But anyhow, it was a whole series, and there are talks and there are exercises. It was really well done. I took a look at it this morning. I went, wow, this was pretty well done. Very impressed by our own activity. So again, I feel as we move into the new year, and we think about sort of, you know, how we want to direct ourselves in the coming year, I certainly recommend that we reflect a bit on these four nutriments and just reflect on our life. I mean, you know, in the ceremony we'll have time, but it's good prep now for us to, you know, begin reflection. So we have a few minutes to take questions. Bill is very competently minding the AV table. And so if you have any questions, please just chat them in, both in terms of what's been shared, but also in terms of application. Please feel free to chat in any question you want. And also people in the hall, if you have any questions. So again, the chat function is down the bottom. Okay, so I take that as something very positive. Everything's clear and everybody knows. So let me just end with just one thought. Obviously, you know, this past year, the pandemic, for some, it's been devastating. Obviously, those who've gotten very sick, those who have died, and for families and friends of those people who have been very sick, and or those who have died, we know it's significant. It continues to be significant in our society, and continues in the world. It's on a rampage, and sounds like it will be for a while. But of course, I think the other thing. Is you know, the social isolation. Again, for those who've been somewhat observing the protocols that have been recommended to us in terms of quarantine, distancing, wearing masks, not gathering the way we used to. I think this has been a difficult year, and especially I think. The more, you know, in that interview with the Dalai Lama, I mean, he's so wonderful. So the first question, so it must have been the last couple of months that this interview took place. And he said, you know, has it, you know, because he mentioned something that the Dalai Lama has been in quarantine for the last 6 or 8 months. So he says, you know, how has this been for you? And the Dalai Lama said, no change. No, there's no change. Yeah. Quite used to, you know, being on retreat and not interacting. It's all fine. And again, I think if you look at what's going on for many of us, our need to connect, our need for social interaction is very strong. And I think as it's gone on, it's become more and more difficult for people to be alone and not interact. And that's understandable in a certain way. We are social creatures. We are social beings. And yet, I think those of us who have mastered the ability to accept things as they are, those of us who have some ability to understand the meaning of happiness is always available to us, are able to weather this kind of situation that our society's been put into, preserving a sense of well-being. I think for people who do not have that ability to have an inner life, who do not have an inner ability to cultivate well-being within themselves, this has been extremely difficult. And when things are very difficult and people don't know how to do that, they are driven to act out. And I think we see that in our society. But I think we have to understand that it's a deeper social malaise. Right? Because we are always connected. At the deeper sense, we are always connected. Mindfulness allows us to connect, even if we were alone, connect with our body, connect with our breath, connect with our mind, connect with positive mind states. If we're not totally in lockdown, we can still connect with the blue sky and the flowers. We can still observe, we can still listen. So, there are many, many ways, very subjective ways, that we can still connect with that which is wholesome and nurturing. Even if we can't go out, even if we can't, we can still feel whole within ourselves. And we can still feel very connected. But if we don't know how to do that, then it can be very difficult and lonely and very disconnected. So again, I would certainly say that, we may have all had different experiences over these past months, and we all may be in different places now. But if this situation has brought us up to an understanding that when I am alone, it does not feel good. It feels lonely, it feels empty, it feels disconnected, right? The answer may not be, can't wait to get out there and start connecting, or to, get on our computers and phones and start connecting virtually. Because those aren't really very, there's not a lot of sustenance there. But learning to, just by relaxing within yourself, relaxing within your own body mind, learning how to connect to your own body breath, to your own awareness, your own present moment experience of just being. Learning to connect to everything you do, brushing your teeth, washing your hair, eating your food, preparing, going to the bath, whatever you're doing. Connecting, present. You will feel good, even if you're alone. This is very important, because we often don't have choices in this life. Sometimes life itself imposes things on us. And the practice gives us a freedom that no matter what happens, no matter what the situation is, we know we always, at the end of the day, have the ability to be at ease and have a sense of well-being. So And again, I just put that out there for reflection. And to know that we have been given the tools. We may not know how to use them well, or we don't know how to use them yet, but we do have the tools. And if we start applying them, I think we will all feel some benefit from them. Again, do I look forward to the day that we don't have to all go around like masked men and women, you know? I certainly do. Do I look forward to the time that I can freely interact with my children and grandchildren and family and Sangha family? I certainly do. But on the other hand, everything's okay right now. So with that, I'll bow to you. Look forward to seeing many of you on Friday at our beginning a new ceremony. Thank you.